This is John Nesbitt with another review of our Passing Parade. And this chapter will concern itself primarily with the story of a man who gave his life to a single idea, the attempt to see further than any mortal has ever done. This will be a special edition of this series in which we will devote two broadcasts to a single story, since it deals with the immense subject of men who search beyond the stars. And that is the clue to this review of our Passing Parade. On the reviewing stand now, I have for some time been searching for a story among all the reams of newspaper clippings and publicity handouts that describe the immense telescope with the 17-foot-wide lens that is now in use on Mount Palomar in California. For nearly 15 years now, we've all been hearing about that super telescope, the biggest, best, most expensive and exciting mechanical affair ever put together by man. But when you try to find out just what this colossal affair is going to do, just what you will be able to see with it, then the going gets rough. Because astronomy is something that hardly one person out of 1,000 gives a hoot about, and which perhaps only 1 out of 100,000 really understands. And yet, during all these years of the hullabaloo about the telescope on Palomar, great human stories have been hidden, because whenever man tries to do the impossible, you will find that somewhere, somebody has sacrificed most of the years of his life to make a dream come true. So here's the story. The story of the 200-inch telescope on Mount Palomar begins in Chicago, Illinois, in the year 1881. On an estate near Chicago, there lived a rich man's son. His name was George Ellery Hale. His father had made a mint of money manufacturing elevators, and his boy George had everything that money could buy. He also had something money cannot buy, a father who understood him. When he was 13, George asked his father if he could have a telescope, and his father bought him one immediately, glad to get his boy a toy that might teach him something. He bought him, however, a lot of brass parts, helped his boy to assemble them, and then got out of the way while his child looked through the little telescope. And that changed the boy forever. From that hour, this 13-year-old, son of a successful and practical businessman, was one of those strange and lonely humans who dedicate their lives to the stars, an astronomer. An astronomer is a man who stays up all night studying the heavens and then stays up all day doing arithmetic. But he is happy. He thinks, I will learn something, perhaps, of how the Creator made this earth I walk upon. I may learn a tiny fragment of the knowledge that may teach us when this earth will die, how a star is born, whether living things roam those other worlds out there and look at our planet and wonder if living things creep over the surface here. And of course a lot more than this, because the sky is the measureless question mark. But if you feel like this, thereafter you walk pretty much alone, because astronomy is a science that you either love profoundly or it merely bores you. George Ellery Hale caught the disease, and for the rest of the years of his life, this Chicago boy lived only to seek more knowledge about the mystery of the universe. By the time he was 23 years old, he had gone through college, taken the mountains of math and physics and chemistry that astronomers consider fun. He had gotten a Ph.D. degree to wear after his name, and also, somehow, he had gotten himself a girl. He married her, and for a honeymoon took her straight to California, but not to sit on the beach and hold hands, but to visit a new telescope at the Lick Observatory. I cannot imagine how any woman can be happy married to an astronomer, considering their nocturnal habits, but the fact is, several of them have made perfectly satisfactory husbands, which seems remarkable. Still, young George Hale would visit his father and say, Dad, I need a bigger telescope, and his father would dig out some more of that elevator money and watch his son's telescopes growing larger. One of them was 13 inches across, which is a very fancy job indeed, since telescopes are made like magnificent watches, and for anything larger than a foot across, you begin talking in hundreds of thousands of dollars. The day came when Hale's father shook his head. No, George, I'm not Carnegie or Rockefeller. Now find yourself a multimillionaire who's as crazy about the stars as you are. So George Hale went multimillionaire hunting. And in 1900, America had the world's largest telescope, 40 inches across. The millionaires had been squeezed as expertly as a soda jerk removes juice from an orange, and Hale had his telescope. But still just a boy, he was now an invalid. His nerves were shattered from the effort of peeling hundreds of thousands of dollars from the bankrolls of men who took a lot of convincing before they could see why we needed to gather so much impractical information about the stars. And it was then that Hale might have given up or died of exhaustion, except that he then decided that we should have a larger telescope yet, one that would be perhaps 17 feet across. And after nearly half a century, his dream put that 200-inch camera up on Mount Palomar, which may in our lifetimes help us decide whether there was or is life on Mars, whether our universe is expanding, or how many million more years our green planet will continue to live in the warmth of the sun. And in a moment we'll go on with this human record of how the utterly fantastic and impossible finally became a reality of America's passing parade. This is John Nesbitt on the reviewing stand once more to watch this man whose entire life was centered around the desire to find a camera the size of a house, because after all, that's what the giant telescope really is, then to find a mountain to set it upon, and then turn that camera upon the universe, maybe to prove nothing at all, maybe to solve a little of the mystery of what put you and me upon this planet. In the years just before the First World War and just after it, America's millionaires, even billionaires like Henry Ford, or fabulously wealthy men like Andrew Carnegie or Strauss or Schwab, would find themselves in their offices facing a strange fellow about 50 now named George Ellery Hale. And they would say, "Well, Mr. Hale, what do you want?" "Why," Mr. Hale would answer, $1 million would do for a starter, but naturally that would only get things going." And then the multimillionaires would laugh, pull a cigar out of their humidors, and usually say, "Well, you certainly have modest ideas, Mr. Hale. What's your proposition?" George Hale would smile too then and say, "Why, we need a big telescope, say a couple of 100 inches across for the mirror, and then the man of millions would become interested. 200 inches, that's 17 feet of glass. Not a factory on earth could make a solid hunk of glass or crystal like that." Now Hale had his man going, and he would lean forward across the desk. "No, sir, the French glassmakers have tried, and they have failed to get anything near as large. But that is no reason we can't do the job right here in America." So Hale, who was a beggar who begged in terms of millions, would set up his traps. Because sooner or later the rich man would begin figuring. "Well, now, even if it could be done, a piece of glass like that would weigh 50 tons. Where are you going to find a mounting for the lens that can flip 50 tons of glass around the sky?" "I don't know, sir, but with a few $1 million and your help, I imagine it might be done." "Good Lord," the financier puffs on his cigar. "Do you think I've got the money to back a thing like that?" "Oh, no, sir, but a couple of million of your dollars would help." "Mr. Hale, suppose I go crazy and try to help you. Won't it take a lot of research and a lot of time?" And Hale would reply, "Oh, maybe 20, maybe 30 years from now, of course. Then we might know the answer." So one of America's famous money bags would glare at this scientist and sum up what to him must have seemed at first the maddest idea since flying to the moon. "Okay, Mr. Hale, you've taken my time asking for from $1 to $2 million, which I am to pungle up at once to start work on a 17-foot telescope lens that nobody knows how to make, for an observatory that's impossible to build, for which I don't receive any credit, any profit, or even understanding. And if I do this, all I can hope for is that maybe something might come of it long after my death. Is that correct?" And George Hale would say with a pleased expression, "Why, yes, sir, quite correct." And isn't it funny, then, that those men gave him the millions anyway? No, it's not very funny. For they were men with the knack for the unbelievable. You don't put together a fortune of a couple of $100 million without having some imagination. So in the United States, half a dozen $1 million had been raised and was waiting to be spent on a single piece of machinery that was to try and conquer the universe. George Ellery Hale was dead. He had said that he would not live to see the dream realized, and his prophecy had been correct. Most of the men who had given the millions were dead. But about 1933... the United States learned that the money had been raised and a telescope built to tear at the secrets of the heavens was under construction at last. And in the next chapter of this two-part story, we are going to come to what is the most incredible part of it, the making of a 17-foot slab of glass that was more perfect in shape than the Earth's finest diamond. We'll close in a moment with the footnote for today's passing parade. As a curious footnote to this first chapter in the story of George Ellery Hale and the Great Telescope, we may add that not only did Hale pour his own health and strength into the task, but the actual making of the immense mirror was so nerve-wracking that one of the leading craftsmen had a mental breakdown and was sent to an institution. Thus, the series of human sacrifices grows and grows as the story unfolds. We'll conclude it in the broadcast to come. And until then, this is John Nesbitt bidding a goodbye to you all.